This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Try to remember the kind of September when life was slow and oh so mellow.
This is Front Row on a Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. We tend to think of the past as if it was something fixed, completely knowable. The past is what we study in history, and history, it has been argued, is a record of events and characters and other facts, quote, assembled to produce an objective picture of the past that is entirely accurate and independent of any human opinion. Then there are others who argue that it is impossible to write an objective history. English historian E.H. Carr argues that history is a continuous process of interaction between the historian and his facts and an unending dialogue between the past and the present. This dialogue is being explored in an exhibition titled The Past is Never Where You Think You Left It, curated by Gauri Balasegaram, who is here with Wailing of Wailing Gallery. Welcome, ladies. Should I use the word ladies? It sounds so so precious, you know?
So I'd like to say girls, oh, but sadly girls. Not. Yeah.
Anyway, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sunny.
Fair to say that this is an exhibition where this dialogue is being carried on about looking at the past and the present and then, in a way, exploring what actually history is.
Yes, absolutely. And it's interesting because the exhibition takes its name from a Catherine Anne Porter novel called The Ship of Fools. And it's a kind of allegory in which it's a novel, but it's an allegory looking back into all the events that caused World War II. So the book in itself that the quote is taken from is looking back in the past. And there is an actual quote in the book, which is called The Past is Never Where You Think You Left It, in which she's trying to say that the past is, it's never a fixed place and we change constantly over time. So the way we look back at the past changes as we change and develop.
Before we jump further into talking about the exhibition itself, I want to kind of talk about whose idea was it? What's the genesis of this exhibition?
Okay, well, I'll just jump in here, Gary. Very quickly, basically, Gary and I reconnected after quite a number of years. I won't say
how
many. Yeah, we were at school together many, many years ago. And Gary came back to Malaysia from the UK a year and a half ago, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
And she contacted me and then we reconnected and, you know, sort of caught up on all those years gone. And then we sort of, I said to Gary, look, I'd really love to, if you could, you know, maybe write for us or curate a show for us. And so we had a bit of a discussion. We met up a few times and then I showed her some of the works that we, shows we've done in the past, the artists that we work with. And sort of we came up with something and Gary threw a few ideas around and then we talked more. And she came up with this theme or the show.
Just to add to that, I think it was something that Wailing said that struck me.
So it wasn't on account of that you both had a history together.
Yes, exactly. And she said, so it was almost like, she said, you can do something about coming back to Malaysia because I've been away for 30 years. And it was the country I had come back to obviously had changed drastically. I came back as a visitor every year to see my parents, but it's a very different thing living in a country versus visiting in it. And Wailing said, why don't you, you know, you could also do something about the past and explore what it's like to come back to Malaysia. And that gave me the idea of a lot of people go away and study abroad, or a lot of people spend time abroad and come back. Some don't, some do. And I thought it was really interesting because they've gone away and they've learned something new. They've come back and how do they assimilate that in the country of their past? How do they integrate that into the future of the country? So all these kind of questions were going on in my mind.
No, you have raised something in my head which I didn't think about. Right, you were away for 30 years, and are you here just for this exhibition, or are you here for good?
No, I'm here for good.
Because I wonder if that would make a difference into how you would curate this exhibition. Now, if you were visiting, what would you see that might be different from if you were returning for good? You know,
because
you yourself made that comment about coming back as a visitor as opposed to coming back.
Yeah, definitely. It because you, the main theme of this exhibition, which I think a lot of the artists have picked up on, is you have a fixed notion of how things were. Sometimes it's nostalgic, sometimes it's not. And you're forced to confront it with the person that you are now versus the person you were when you left, and plus all the changes that have occurred in the country. And I don't think you can really do that if you're visiting, because you really have to immerse yourself in the country once more when you return, because you're part of it. You're not just, you know.
So how much time transpired between your discussion and then talking to the artist before you say, okay, this is it?
Actually, it was pretty quick. I mean, we met up quite a few times, and I think over a course of maybe 2 months, we had a chat, and then we, you know, Gary formulated or put together the brief, the artist's brief, and then the artist had about 3 months, two and a half months to work it through. Of course. We went through a list of artists.
It wasn't just a call for submissions.
No. It was, several of the artists obviously are represented by the gallery already. And we also wanted to introduce artists who are outside, I mean, who are sort of on the perimeter or the peripheral sort of group of artists outside the gallery who we worked with before, but we don't necessarily represent. So it just sort of adds a little bit of freshness, I think, to group shows.
And every one of these artists is a Malaysian artist, right?
Yes. Of course. Everyone is a Malaysian artist, and I think that was the idea. We wanted really for Malaysian artists to sort of to be involved in this, right? To sort of
I know this is probably a sensitive question, but most of them look like they're guys anyway, so they probably don't care. What's the age range of these artists? Because when you're talking about the past, then you want to have a sense of these guys have seen enough of the country.
I think that was it. There were two real criteria. First of all, that the theme would be produce interesting work for them. They would be interested in it, and you know, their work, their practice would complement the theme.
Yeah.
And then the second was, and by definition, you would get someone who's not necessarily a spring chicken, but not necessarily in, you know, something in between.
I mean, like you guys are quite young.
Someone who's lived, experienced life.
Your peers then will be quite young.
Of course. Of course. I think the artists that we selected for the group show, some have had obviously longer careers than others, but they're all sort of, I think, mid-career, all between, I think, between 30 to 50. I think that's the age group, like those 20 years.
50?
Yeah, between 30 to 50. Mm. I think that's the grouping.
Why did you have to tell them in your brief?
So I gave them the background to the Catherine Ann Porter book, the fact that it was an allegory. The fact that The Ship of Fools, which is the name of the book, was also a dialogue by Plato that was written in 380 BC. So again, there were so many elements of the past. And actually, I didn't pick that out. One of the artists said, did you know that The Ship of Fools was a dialogue from Plato, the Greek philosopher, from 380 BC? So we deliberately wanted to keep it kind of open, but a clear direction. So actually, we had said, Could you be inspired by an item from your past that in some way encapsulates or summarizes something from your past that is evocative in memory to you?
So
and
each had to
work.
Come up with a physical, tangible thing.
We said it could be a piece of music, it could be anything, but that for you summarizes an element of your past, and then create work in dialogue to that. And what was really interesting is that I think most of the artists produced work that had that material, but it was part of the work rather than two separate things.
Exactly. Because we thought they might bring in something old and then something new, and then, you know, sort of display it side by side. But what has actually happened is I think the artist who worked closest along that line was Chong Kim Chu, because he made a new painting of some of the camouflage sort of map sort of work. And then he also sort of included 10-year-old works, 10-year-old paintings from, you know, way back when, and displayed them together. Okay. And then you've got someone, for example, like Ivan Lam, instead of doing a painting and getting something old, he actually sort of used old T-shirts that he used to wear over the course of the last, well, over the course of the last, what, 10, 15 years. Yeah. T-shirts that he wore when he actually made his works. So the T-shirts would be sort of like, you know, he'd be painting and he'd be dabbing it on his T-shirt and then
wiping the brushes.
And so those T-shirts were in, well, you know, with sweat and with whatever else. It's all sort of like intrinsically a part of the process in making a work. Because whenever you see a painting, you think, ah, oh, that's a work. And you don't really think back into like the conditions of the studio or what the artist was wearing or the music they were playing when they were making that work. I mean, I'm just sort of, you know, extrapolating on that. So he took those old T-shirts and he's wrapped them around a frame and then resined them. And they've come as one long work of what, 16 or 17 old T-shirts. So it's really interesting because if you didn't know they were T-shirts, you'd think they were actually works, well,
on canvas.
Canvas or something. So that's quite interesting, right? And then you have...
You've got nine artists. Mm-hmm. How many pieces of works are being exhibited?
Oh, good question. A couple did two. Gang Zihui did two. Azra submitted two. And some works were diptych or triptych. So it's a difficult question because we consider it one work, but someone might consider it three works and they all have a dialogue with each other. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's quite an interesting mix of works because we've got lots of different artists working in different ways. So you've got a photographer, we've got, you know, painters, we've got printmakers, we've got a video installation, we've got an installation by Minstrel. Yeah. Minstrel's done a whole, like a room installation. Well, not a room installation, but...
Something about reimagining the nation. Is that her?
Yeah. I'll let Gary explain a little bit about that.
But before we jump into it, I really want to talk also about what notions of the past did they explore? And not we saying in the fact that this somebody is just using T-shirts that he had worn while painting, when this is all put together, what's the dialogue? What kinds of questions are being explored? I'm speaking with Gary Balasingram and Wei Ling, who are responsible for The Past Is Never Where You Left It, which is an exhibition going on at Wei Ling Contemporary in Gardens Mall. Coming up, more about the art and the consequence of a past which is never where you left it. Where has it gone and who has moved it? This is Front Row, The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9. Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng discussing art with Gary Balasingram and the curator of an exhibition, The Past Is Never Where You Left It, and she's accompanied by gallery director Wei Ling Lim. Now, you have given these artists their briefs, they've done their works. What are some of the things or some of the issues that you see them exploring or some of the statements that they are making?
I think for me, the most interesting thing was how they responded to this brief, and it was all in very different ways, which I guess underlines the idea that our past is a subjective thing and history is a subjective thing. So we had a couple of artists look back, have an almost kind of nostalgic view of the past, i.e. the values that we aspire to today, that we can only aspire to today, were once kind of predominant in the past. I think that was Gan Zihui and Kim Ng's sort of said that about their work. Minstrel Quick looks back on kind of Malaysia's perception of itself and the anniversary of its independence. So it's a country celebrating, the work is about the country celebrating its birthday in the wake of the Bursay rally. So it's what does it mean for the country to look back on its birthday in March for Independence? Anurendra Jagadeva examined kind of our relationship with the country's relationship, rather, with China, past and present. We had two artists, Ivan Lam and Choi Chun Wei, that kind of approached it from an art historical way. So they reinterpreted Marcel Duchamp, who was the founder of contemporary art, idea of the ready-made, which is...
And it's bricolage. Is
yes.
that the one?
Yes, right. Yes, yes. Yes. Mm. Both use found items, which is a term in art history, and gave it a life of its own and repurposed it to make it art, which was an evolution of what Marcel Duchamp was trying to say 100 years ago. Another artist, Azra Ismail, brought back, revives a long-dead art practice, which is using the daguerreotype, which was the first ever photographic process made in 1830. And he sort of gives life to it. And he compares by seeing this beautiful image. You look at, you almost look at how images are made today. And there is a lot of nuance and softness and beauty in this image. And it makes you think that something that was produced, and he uses exactly the same techniques and processes, something that, you know, is made today, but using a process that was made over 100 years ago, can be as powerful, if not more powerful, than, you know, all the technology we have today. So there's a lot of really interesting ideas in the works.
Because these are all Malaysians and they are in a way looking at the country either through themselves or through some, like we say, with Anu's relationship between Malaysia and China, what kind of past did they paint for us? What kind of past is created for us?
It varies, I think. Mm. There's hope, optimism, disillusionment. You know, when you look back at the past, it's never one thing. We can try and summarize it as one thing, but you know, things are never all bad; they're never all good either. So it's a fluctuation. It's even in one work, even in the works which are nostalgic, there's a hint of optimism. There's a hint of, well, you know, our grandmothers were nostalgic about the past. We're nostalgic about the past. Maybe that's just an inherent part of human nature. Mm. But you know, the younger generation look towards the future. Who knows? But certainly there is no single one thing. Some of them are a little bit bleak, but even in their bleakness, I think there's hope.
Flick of hope.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you know, anything. I mean, no matter how, you know, awful or, you know, the past might have been, it is whatever may have happened in the past has happened, and there's nothing you can do to change that. And I think that's really... You know, when you think about life, this is a fact, right? You know, and instead of sort of, you know, sort of doing away with or trying to forget the past or trying to cover it up, why don't we celebrate it?
Mm. Bad and good.
Both good and bad. I think really that's the only way to look at it, really.
How accessible are these works of art to someone who walks off the street, goes into your gallery to look at these pieces? How accessible are these works of art?
I think because they all have a story to tell, and it's a personal story or a collective story, and if you take Minstrel Quick's work, that some of them are more immediate than others. I don't think you need to know that the daguerreotype, for example, was invented in 1830. You know that it's an old... People have seen those sort of old single frame silver plates. And you know it's an old picture, but you can see, I guess, from various things like the iPad that the mother is holding, that it's a modern, it's
image.
Taken in a modern context. So I think it depends on how you perceive and observe. Certainly the works require a bit of observation, but I think that's with any work of art. The more you look at it and observe a work of art, the more you get out of it. So
yeah. I mean, from a more obvious point of view, I think what we've done also this time is, you know, Gary has, you know, spoken to the artist, and she's also sort of created little cards where you can read a little bit about what that work is about and where it's coming from. So if you just go in there with a blank, not knowing what the show is about, and you want it to so have a little bit of an insight for the curator, there's a little card that's, you know, sits next to the work that tells you a little bit about where the artist is coming from.
Should art be accessible?
Absolutely. I don't think it should be dumbed down, but it should be accessible to everyone. I think everyone has something to say, and art should reflect how we live, kind of how contemporary society lives. So,
and is the intent of the artist in doing this particular piece of work, is that intent something that as the curator you try to make apparent?
Yes, yes. That's an interesting question because I think a really good piece of art speaks to different people on different levels. Mm-hmm. There's never one single thing. There are so many nuances. Now, I won't necessarily get some of the nuances in all of the pieces in the work, maybe because, you know, I don't speak a particular dialect. I don't come from this particular town, but I can form an opinion, or it can talk to me on another level, a level about community or something else. So, yeah, so I think it's fair to say that different people will get different things out of it, and not everyone will get the same thing, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely, Sunghing, to answer your question, I think accessibility is so important, you know, that people can just walk into the gallery. I mean, look, it's at the Gardens Mall. It's free admission. It's up there. Just walk in. So if people walk out of there having experienced something, whether it's positive or negative, at least they've experienced something. Do you know what I mean?
No, I think people should experience something, but I think what would be the most sad commentary is like, I'm looking at this, I don't know what I'm looking at.
Yeah, yeah.
That's sure. For me, often, I think a lot of people looking at art, in particular contemporary art, you know, and just say, what's my frame of reference even?
Yeah.
Well, I think the more difficult a piece of work is, the more you question and say, what in the world is that? That should then perhaps spur you. I mean, look, you've got your iPhone. You can just Google an artist. No, seriously, Google an artist. And if you're that interested, if you're that curious, or you're that sort of, you know, sort of confused about what in the world is this, Google them and see who they are. I mean, that in itself already sort of like, you know, takes you a step closer to trying to understanding perhaps what's being...
I think that's interesting because if you consider 150 years ago, people were looking at the work of the Impressionist artists and thinking, what in the world is that? That's awful. That's not art. Yeah. Who do these people think they are? And now we accept them as, you know,
one of the
greatest works of art, you know, in at least in the Western world. So it's, you know, I think it's good to be shaken up. If art makes people ask questions, then that's a good thing.
I think art should make people ask questions, but I fear sometimes people don't even know what question to begin with. Not that I want to highlight a particular piece of work saying that it's the best in the exhibition, but I just want to use as an example so that our audience out there can have at least a kind of something visual in their heads. And in particular, I like to look at Gansi Hui's Zing Generation Lost. Mm. Gary, can I get you to describe it, what we are looking at?
Yeah, the work is an interactive installation or interactive painting. And if you try and imagine a window frame, which you can open literally, and sort of very loosely on the top part of the frame before you open it, is a canvas with edges that have been burnt out. And it looks like...
I thought they were torn out. Oh, burnt out.
It's
all roof and sort of like kind of dark and very brown and dark and grey and sort of a bit burnt
and zinky coloured. The scene is roofs collapsing down, and around the canvas are sort of burnt out bits. And if you open the window of the painting installation, it opens up sort of double side into a scene of a family.
At dinner.
It's a reunion dinner.
It's an eve of Chinese New Year's Day.
With the parents, with like different generations of, you know, children sitting around a table.
And the house, you could see the interior of the house is actually quite, it's one of those traditional houses.
Strikes me as almost like one of those new village homes, you know?
I would definitely say that it is reflective.
That you might
of that,
still find in smaller towns Taiping
absolutely.
And Ipoh.
Absolutely. And
that's the idea. It's the artist considers himself part of the Zing generation. A lot of these old homes were made with zinc roofs, and now obviously not so. This kind of house generally tended to be as part of a community. There was never just one of them. There would be several. If there was one, there was a lot. And if there was a lot, then it meant you had a community. So in a way, what the work is, I guess, talking about is how that sense of community has been eroded with the disappearance of those houses. Now it's all condos or cold buildings. So he's really just...
Sort of lamenting a lost
way of life.
So in a way, the burnt out part is to suggest that this, in a way, raised to the ground condominiums raised from the ground.
Absolutely.
There is no sense of utopia there? That was utopia, and utopia is being burnt away.
Well, I think Ivan's work is I wouldn't necessarily say utopia, but it's very upbeat. There's a sense of humor about it and intelligence. He's using, you know, T-shirts becoming art, but they're really beautiful. He's made something into a really beautiful work of art, but that is essentially, you know, started life as a lowly T-shirt, you know, to be covered in sweat and paint. And it's a humorous take on something that is, it's a simple idea, beautifully executed. It's one of those things that you think, God, why didn't I think of that? Yeah. And for me, the sort of mass of colour, and all the T-shirts are different colours, and the masses of paint, brush, you know, which is sort of merged to create some sort of abstract, colourful abstract paintings, is optimistic.
No, because art follows rules of aesthetics. I'm putting that within quotation marks. The grotesque becomes in its own way beautiful. By doing that, does that present the past or the present somehow as beautiful?
Yes, I would say there is certainly a sense of aesthetic to the work, some more than others. But it's meant to evoke, I wouldn't necessarily say, it evokes feeling as opposed to
just a decorative. Yeah. Of course, an aesthetic is important, but again, it should be, I think the strength of the work comes from understanding the layers beneath it, not just from the first layer that you see, right? So I think any work of art, actually, something in anything, in any work of art that you look at, I mean, you might look at it and visually it's arresting and it's interesting, and then you dig a little deeper and then you realise, oh my gosh, it's vacuous. And then you think, well, maybe it's not as interesting anymore, as with anything, right?
So the aesthetics is like the first...
Yes.
Perhaps,
It's a thing to evoke and bring you in. And
as a parting comment, why should we go see this?
Of course, Suning.
Justify.
Well, having had a short trawl of exhibitions out there, it's a little bit different, and I think it's something that taps into us as Malaysians, but it's something that I think, all to your point earlier, people can relate to, but they'll take something out of it, and hopefully, you know, they might actually, even seeing another person's point of view or experiencing another person's point of view is a really interesting, valid thing. The exhibition has different dimensions, and hopefully that would be of interest to people.
I think Sun Heng, also the thing is, I think the nine artists who are showing at this, or who have made work for this show, I would say represent a nice cross-section of this generation of artists, some of the strongest artists, and, you know, who are making commentary or reflecting or mirroring the times that we're living in. These are the artists, these are some of the voices who are out there now. And it would be interesting for people to go there just to sort of take in their point of view and their reflection of the past.
And see a different Malaysia or Malaya.
Yes.
Thank you, ladies,
for sharing
your experience and your expertise on and your love for art and talking about it. The Past Is Never Where You Think You Left It, curated by Gary Balasingram, is held at Wayland Contemporary on the 6th floor, the Gardens Mall. The exhibition continues through Thursday, August 11th. Gallery hours are from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. daily, closed on Mondays. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Remember when I was young, so were you, and time stood still, and love was all we knew. You were the first, so was I, made love and then you cried. Remember when? Remember